with justice exercising upon those about you. You are well versed in coloring your own actions with excuses, which you will not accept from others, though it would be more just to accuse yourself and excuse your brother. If you wish men to bear with you, you must bear with them. Behold how far you are from true charity and humility, which does not know how to be angry with anyone or to be indignant, save only against self. It is no great thing to associate with the good and gentle, for such association is naturally pleasing. Everyone enjoys a peaceful life and prefers persons of congenial habits, but to be able to live at peace with harsh and perverse men, or with the undisciplined and those who irritate us, is a great grace, a praiseworthy and manly thing. Some people live at peace with themselves and with their fellow men, but others are never at peace with themselves, nor do they bring it to anyone else. These latter are a burden to everyone, but they are more of a burden to themselves. A few, finally, live at peace with themselves and try to restore it to others. Now all our peace in this miserable life is found in humbly enduring suffering rather than in being free from it. He who knows best how to suffer will enjoy the greater peace, because he is the conqueror of himself, the master of the world, a friend of Christ, and an heir of heaven. The fourth chapter, Purity of Mind and Unity of Purpose. A man is raised up from the earth by two wings, simplicity and purity. There must be simplicity in his intention and purity in his desires. Simplicity leads to God, purity embraces and enjoys him. If your heart is free from ill-ordered affection, no good deed will be difficult for you. If you aim at and seek after nothing but the pleasure of God and the welfare of your neighbor, you will enjoy freedom within. If your heart were right, then every created thing would be a mirror of life for you and a book of holy teaching, for there is no creature so small and worthless that it does not show forth the goodness of God. If inwardly you were good and pure, you would see all things clearly and understand them rightly, for a pure heart penetrates to heaven and hell, and as a man is within, so he judges what is without. If there be joy in the world, the pure of heart certainly possess it, and if there be anguish and affliction anywhere, an evil conscience knows it too well. As iron cast into fire loses its rust and becomes glowing white, so he who turns completely to God is stripped of his sluggishness and changed into a new man. When a man begins to grow lax, he fears a little toil and welcomes external comfort. But when he begins perfectly to conquer himself and to walk bravely in the ways of God, then he thinks those things less difficult which he thought so hard before. The fifth chapter, Ourselves. We must not rely too much upon ourselves, for grace and understanding are often lacking in us. We have but little inborn light, and this we quickly lose through negligence. Often we are not aware that we are so blind in heart. Meanwhile, we do wrong, and then do worse in excusing it. At times we are moved by passion, and we think it zeal. We take others to task for small mistakes and overlook greater ones in ourselves. We are quick enough to feel and brood over the things we suffer from others, but we think nothing of how much others suffer from us. If a man would weigh his own deeds fully and rightly, he would find little cause to pass severe judgment on others. The interior man puts the care of himself before all other concerns, and he who attends to himself carefully does not find it hard to hold his tongue about others. You will never be devout of heart unless you are thus silent about the affairs of others and pay particular attention to yourself. If you attend wholly to God and yourself, you will be little disturbed by what you see about you. Where are your thoughts when they are not upon yourself? And after attending to various things, what have you gained if you have neglected self? If you wish to have true peace of mind and unity of purpose, you must cast all else aside and keep only yourself before your eyes. You will make great progress if you keep yourself free from all temporal cares, for to value anything that is temporal is a great mistake. Consider nothing great, nothing high, nothing pleasing, nothing acceptable, except God himself, or that which is of God. Consider the consolations of creatures as vanity, for the soul that loves God scorns all things that are inferior to him. God alone, the eternal and infinite, satisfies all, bringing comfort to the soul and true joy to the body. The sixth chapter, The Joy of a Good Conscience. The glory of a good man is the testimony of a good conscience. Therefore, keep your conscience good, and you will always enjoy happiness. For a good conscience can bear a great deal, and can bring joy even in the midst of adversity. But an evil conscience is ever restive and fearful. Sweet shall be your rest if your heart does not reproach you. Do not rejoice unless you have done well. Sinners never experience true interior joy or peace, for there is no peace to the wicked, says the Lord. Footnote 10, Isaiah 48:22. Even if they say, we are at peace, no evil shall befall us, and no one dares to hurt us, do not believe them, for the wrath of God will arise quickly, and their deeds will be brought to naught, and their thoughts will perish. To glory in adversity is not hard for the man who loves, for this is to glory in the cross of the Lord. But the glory given or received of men is short-lived, and the glory of the world is ever companioned by sorrow. The glory of the good, however, is in their conscience and not in the lips of men, for the joy of the just is from God and in God, and their gladness is founded on truth. A man who longs for the true eternal glory does not care for that of time, and he who seeks passing fame or does not in his heart despise it undoubtedly cares little for the glory of heaven. He who minds neither praise nor blame possesses great peace of heart, and if his conscience is good, he will easily be contented and at peace. Praise adds nothing to your holiness, nor does blame take anything from it. You are what you are, and you cannot be said to be better than you are in God's sight. If you consider well what you are within, you will not care what men say about you. They look to appearances, but God looks to the heart. They consider the deed, but God weighs the motive. It is characteristic of a humble soul always to do good and to think little of itself. It is a mark of great purity and deep faith to look for no consolation in created things. The man who desires no justification from without has clearly entrusted himself to God. For not he who commendeth himself is approved, says St. Paul, but he whom God commendeth. Footnote 11, 2 Corinthians 10:18. To walk with God interiorly, to be free from any external affection, this is the state of the inward man. The seventh chapter, Loving Jesus Above All Things. Blessed is he who appreciates what it is to love Jesus, and who despises himself for the sake of Jesus. Give up all other love for his, since he wishes to be loved alone above all things. Affection for creatures is deceitful and inconstant, but the love of Jesus is true and enduring. He who clings to a creature will fall with its frailty, but he who gives himself to Jesus will ever be strengthened. Love him then, keep him as a friend. He will not leave you as others do, or let you suffer lasting death. Sometime, whether you will or not, you will have to part with everything. Cling therefore to Jesus in life and death. Trust yourself to the glory of him who alone can help you when all others fail. Your beloved is such that he will not accept what belongs to another. He wants your heart for himself alone, to be enthroned therein as king in his own right. If you but knew how to free yourself entirely from all creatures, Jesus would gladly dwell within you. You will find apart from him that nearly all the trust you place in men is a total loss. Therefore, neither confide in nor depend upon a wind, shaken reed, for all flesh is grass, and all its glory, like the flower of grass, will fade away. Footnote 12, Isaiah 15:6. You will quickly be deceived if you look only to the outward appearance of men, and you will often be disappointed if you seek comfort and gain in them. If, however, you seek Jesus in all things, you will surely find him. Likewise, if you seek yourself, you will find yourself to your own ruin. For the man who does not seek Jesus does himself much greater harm than the whole world and all his enemies could ever do. The 8th chapter. The intimate friendship of Jesus. When Jesus is near, all is well and nothing seems difficult. When he is absent, all is hard. When Jesus does not speak within, all other comfort is empty. But if he says only a word, it brings great consolation. Did not Mary Magdalene rise at once from her weeping when Martha said to her, "The Master is come and calleth for thee"? Footnote 13, John 11:28. Happy is the hour when Jesus calls one from tears to joy of spirit. How dry and hard you are without Jesus. How foolish and vain if you desire anything but him. Is it not a greater loss than losing the whole world? For what without Jesus can the world give you? Life without him is a relentless hell, but living with him is a sweet paradise. If Jesus be with you, no enemy can harm you. He who finds Jesus finds a rare treasure, indeed, a good above every good, whereas he who loses him loses more than the whole world. The man who lives without Jesus is the poorest of the poor, whereas no one is so rich as the man who lives in his grace. It is a great art to know how to converse with Jesus, great wisdom to know how to keep him. Be humble and peaceful, and Jesus will be with you. Be devout and calm, and he will remain with you. You may quickly drive him away and lose his grace if you turn back to the outside world. And if you drive him away and lose him, to whom will you go, and whom will you then seek as a friend? You cannot live well without a friend, and if Jesus be not your friend above all else, you will be very sad and desolate. Thus you are acting foolishly if you trust or rejoice in any other. Choose the opposition of the whole world rather than offend Jesus. Of all those who are dear to you, let him be your special love. Let all things be loved for the sake of Jesus, but Jesus for his own sake. Jesus Christ must be loved alone with a special love, for he alone, of all friends, is good and faithful. For him and in him you must love friends and foes alike, and pray to him that all may know and love him. Never desire special praise or love, for that belongs to God alone, who has no equal. Never wish for anyone's affection be centered in you, nor let yourself be taken up with the love of anyone, but let Jesus be in you and in every good man. Be pure and free within, unentangled with any creature. You must bring to God a clean and open heart if you wish to attend and see how sweet the Lord is. Truly, you will never attain this happiness unless his grace prepares you and draws you on so that you may forsake all things to be united with him alone. When the grace of God comes to a man, he can do all things, but when it leaves him, he becomes poor and weak, abandoned, as it were, to affliction. Yet in this condition, he should not become dejected or despair. On the contrary, he should calmly await the will of God and bear whatever befalls him in the praise of Jesus Christ. For after winter comes summer, after night the day, and after the storm a great calm. The 9th chapter. Wanting no share in comfort. It is not hard to spurn human consolation when we have the divine. It is, however, a very great thing indeed to be able to live without either divine or human comforting, and for the honor of God willingly to endure this exile of heart, not to seek oneself in anything, and to think nothing of one's own merit. Does it matter much if at the coming of grace you are cheerful and devout? This is an hour desired by all, for he whom the grace of God sustains travels easily enough. What wonder if he feel no burden when borne up by the Almighty and led on by the Supreme Guide, for we are always glad to have something to comfort us, and only with difficulty does a man divest himself of self. The holy martyr, Lawrence, with his priest, conquered the world because he despised everything in it that seemed pleasing to him, and for love of Christ patiently suffered the great high priest of God, Sixtus, whom he loved dearly, to be taken from him. Thus, by his love for the Creator, he overcame the love of man, and chose instead of human consolation the good pleasure of God. So you too must learn to part with an intimate and much-needed friend for the love of God. Do not take it to heart when you are deserted by a friend, knowing that in the end we must all be parted from one another. A man must fight long and bravely against himself before he learns to master himself fully and to direct all his affections toward God. When he trusts in himself, he easily takes to human consolation. The true lover of Christ, however, who sincerely pursues virtue, does not fall back upon consolations nor seek such pleasures of sense, but prefers severe trials and hard labors for the sake of Christ. When, therefore, spiritual consolation is given by God, receive it gratefully, but understand that it is His gift and not your meriting. Do not exult, do not be overjoyed, do not be presumptuous, but be the humbler for the gift, more careful and wary in all your actions, for this hour will pass and temptation will come in its wake. When consolation is taken away, do not at once despair, but wait humbly and patiently for the heavenly visit, since God can restore to you more abundant solace. This is neither new nor strange to one who knows God's ways, for such change of fortune often visited the great saints and prophets of old. Thus there was one who, when grace was with him, declared, "In my prosperity, I said, I shall never be moved." But when grace was taken away, he adds what he experienced in himself, "Thou didst hide thy face, and I was troubled." Meanwhile, he does not despair, rather he prays more earnestly to the Lord, saying, "To thee, O Lord, will I cry, and I will make supplication to my God." At length he receives the fruit of his prayer, and testifying that he was heard, says, "The Lord hath heard, and hath had mercy on me. The Lord became my helper." And how was he helped? "Thou hast turned," he said, "my mourning into joy, and hast surrounded me with gladness." Footnote 14, Psalm 29:7-12. If this is the case with great saints, we who are weak and poor ought not to despair, because we are fervent at times and at other times cold, for the Spirit comes and goes according to His will. Of this the blessed Job declared, "Thou visitest him early in the morning, and thou provest him suddenly." Footnote 15, Job 7:18. In what can I hope then, or in whom ought I trust, save only in the great mercy of God and the hope of heavenly grace? For though I have with me good men, devout brethren, faithful friends, holy books, beautiful treatises, sweet songs and hymns, all these help and please but little when I am abandoned by grace and left to my poverty. At such times there is no better remedy than patience and resignation of self to the will of God. I have never met a man so religious and devout that he has not experienced at some time a withdrawal of grace and felt a lessening of fervor. No saint was so sublimely rapt and enlightened as not to be tempted before and after. He indeed is not worthy of the sublime contemplation of God who has not been tried by some tribulation for the sake of God. For temptation is usually the sign preceding the consolation that is to follow, and heavenly consolation is promised to all those proved by temptation. "To him that overcometh," says Christ, "I will give to eat of the tree of life." Footnote 16, Apocrypha 2:7. Divine consolation, then, is given in order to make a man braver in enduring adversity, and temptation follows in order that he may not pride himself